Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, a lot going on in Lions world. Penei Sewell's throwing out first pitches at Tigers games, kicking off the season at Comerica Park. But maybe more importantly, there's a lot going on in your world when it comes to working in the Lions media universe. So maybe you want to kick us off with that today.
Yeah, thanks. Morning. Nice to see you, buddy.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning. This past week, our parent company, SB Nation, who runs our website at over at Pride of Detroit, they decided to move in a different direction with podcasts. And so, for those of you who've been listening to us for a while, you know that I. Have you and I have been part of this podcast for 7 years, but I've been part of the Pride of Detroit podcast for about two. And so they had been going for 9 years. I've been part of their team for the last 2 years. It's been part of my job. It's been an exciting part of my job. And unfortunately, the SB Nation decided to shut down that podcast. Now, there's a lot of red tape that goes into that is being sorted through, how to continue that podcast, if it's possible to continue that podcast. There's a lot of unknowns that are being sorted through, with, between Jeremy and Ryan and Chris, myself, and the higher ups and the decision makers. And so we're trying to figure out how to continue to provide content for the Pride of Detroit audience. In the interim, because I know there is a need, and because of the response that we've had on social media, which has really been tremendous, we've seen a lot of more subscribers to our podcast. We've seen a lot more Patreon subscribers that have been looking to help compensate me personally, which has been very kind. But in an effort to try and supplement some of that missing, podcast, voices out there, I think we're going to try and expand what we do here. Still working out the details. Nothing's going to change with Joe and I. Joe and I are still going to do the same show that we do every week. We're still going to, it's going to be the same format. We're going to do everything exactly the same. There's nothing that changes with our podcast, but we're going to try and see if maybe we can implement a couple of new things, especially leading up to the draft, when I know Lions fans are very hungry for more content. So we're doing our best. We're going to try and come up with something new. And ideally, it's going to be something that you guys enjoy. Now, it's not going to be the POD format. It's not going to be how they do it. We're not trying to replace them. We're trying to come up with new ideas to supplement information and try and get creative in how we can distribute some more content for people. So it's kind of a it's really sad. I mean, it's sad on their end. It's a 9 year project that went away, and for us, we've been doing it, like I said, like 7 years, I think now, 7.5. And so I know I would be, tremendously sad if I had that much output, or it's that much, content that we'd been working on that would have went away. I am tremendously sad that even though I've only been part of it for 2 years, it's still a big part was still a big part of what I did at the site. And so I'm pretty disappointed, and hopefully we'll find our feet over there, and in the interim we'll see what we can do to help people out.
All right, so that's some interesting news right there. This week, you and I will be doing a mailbag. So, as you pointed out, running up to the NFL draft, people are getting pretty draft ravenous, but we're going to dig in the mailbag today. Our first question's about the Lions staffs from Mike Urkel. Lots of Lions coaches in front office have been interviewed and got other jobs in the last 2 years. Where is the interest in Ray Agnew? He seems like a straight shooter and a great assistant general manager. Seems like a dude who at least should be moderately coveted by the NFL.
He's gotten some attention. He's gotten a couple of interviews, but it's nothing at the level that what we've seen with the coaches. Now, with the coaches themselves, with Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn, it's a lot more public. It's in the face. It's people that we see every, time the lines are on. It's guys that we know. We have interview processes with the assistant coaches all the time. So there's a very media presence, both nationally and locally, surrounding those coaches. And so we hear a lot about what's happening with them. With the front office, it tends to be a little bit more subdued. You hear a lot about it if you're looking for a GM, but if you have someone in place, you usually don't hear about what's going on until a hire has been made. And so we've seen that the last couple of years with a couple Lions front office guys getting hired elsewhere. And so I do. Ray is getting attention. It's not a ton from what we can gather, but his name's being floated out there. That's part of why you're seeing him do more interviews. It's or public interviews, I'd say. And it's also, it's he's established himself as a name, and I think he is in a good spot here. But at the same time, I think the opportunities are harder to come by as a GM, and they're slower to come by. But I do think the opportunities will come for him down the road.
All right, moving on to the players' questions. This one's from WB. Is there an official policy to cutting Cam Sutton, like for detrimental conduct? If so, or not, and if he's not guilty, do we get a bigger cap hit? What's the process since he's technically not guilty? Walk me through this, please. Now, this is an interesting question, was because I was thinking about this too. Like, since I don't know if the charges were dropped or whatever, and
Reduced.
yeah, and so like he's not technically not guilty, but doesn't it change what what's going on with him as far as being released by the Lions?
I think the leg that the Lions have to stand on is that he has essentially what's conduct detrimental to the team. He also has he didn't show up to he didn't report when he was supposed to. It was almost a month from when he was charged to when he was not, until he, I'm sorry, until he showed up, turned himself in, and then the charges were reduced from assault and battery strangulation to domestic violence, a misdemeanor. Because he didn't report, I think is enough justification for Lions to still continue down the path that they did for his release. They can say conduct detrimental to the team. They can say he wasn't available for work because they did have contact with him, but then they didn't, and they didn't know where he was for a little bit after he left. And so I'm not exactly sure what their argument is, but they filed that petition when they cut him, right? And so whether or not he's the, charges stick, or whether or not the charges have been reduced, he is still, his actions from the moment a warrant went out for his arrest, I think, justify his release, or at least it would be in the league's eyes. So from a salary cap standpoint, the big part is the guaranteed salary that he had, the $10.5 million cap hit for this year. That I think the Lions are still in a good spot to get that back because of his actions. The signing bonus, the $7.5 million signing bonus, that was something that they would only be able to get back after Sutton has gone through the court process. So even though the charges were reduced, if he ends up getting a charge that restricts him from doing his job, then they could justify getting that money back. If he gets a charge that doesn't restrict him from doing his job, they're probably not going to be able to get that signing bonus back. But again, we have to wait for the legal process to come out with that. I think that was getting that signing bonus back was always questionable and always,
Tenuous.
yeah, not something that they thought that was going to happen. But the big $10.5 million that's occurring this year, I believe that's something that's still in play for them to get back because of the actions.
Next question's from Glenn Phil. Well, you know what? How quickly does Cam Sutton sign with the Steelers? Go back home.
I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, if he does, I mean, if he ends up signing with someone, that
To the
certainly doesn't help.
49ers.
Well, yeah, it certainly doesn't help their case for getting back the signing bonus. I don't think it would impact them getting back the 10.5 that they used, the guaranteed salary portion anyways.
Interesting, thing
Yeah,
for
we'll
the
have to see how
Lions,
it plays.
just because how poorly he played the stretch, and how nobody seems to care that he's been released. No,
You're
I mean,
right. No,
because
I hear you.
if it was another player, we'd be like, if it, I don't want to throw somebody else's name there, but if it was one of the star players, we'd be like, well, you can't release him. We got to figure this out. Never mind. All right. Glenn Phelps question. When, not if, we extend Amon-Ra St. Brown and Goff, the salary doesn't start until 25, but will the signing bonus dollars count at all toward the 24 salary cap we have now, or only when the new salary begins?
So the way it works is typically a new contract is essentially formed, right? So yes, there is an existing salary that they have on the cap for the 2024 season, but with a new contract, they typically restructure that first year with Goff. The Lions can actually lower his cap hit in 2024 because it's essentially a brand new contract. The only reason it's called a re-sign is because you have to account when you do an extension, you have to account for the existing contract to work that into. You can't like eliminate things, guarantees and stuff like that from the existing contract. That has to be worked into the new contract. But essentially, it will be like a brand new contract. So it works like a brand new contract. You can reduce the number for Goff. For St. Brown, the number's gonna most likely go up in 2024, but it's gonna go up because of the signing bonus. The signing bonus for any contract, when you sign that contract, that signing bonus is paid. So the signing bonus would absolutely kick in this season if they gave them an extension. Now, the way you structure the contract can spread that signing bonus out over however many years of the contract. You can add voided years and stuff like that to reduce the cap hit. But everything basically it works like a new contract. You're just including the old contract numbers as part of it. So think of it as a new contract. Don't think of it as like two separate things. It's all going to be together as one.
D-Man asks, is Hendon Hooker QB2?
I don't think there's a doubt in my mind, right? I think they brought back Sudfeld, but Sudfeld, he wasn't going to be. They thought enough of Sudfeld to bring him back because he knows the system and he's good competition. And for a while there in training camp, he was doing well. At the same time, they also felt like they needed to upgrade him. And they've invested in Hooker. They believe in Hooker. They've set this all up for Hooker to be number two. And so I don't think. Well, I think we'll see some competition, and we'll they're never gonna like just let guys sit into a spot. I do think that the expectation is that Hendon Hooker is the second quarterback on the team, and Nate Sudfeld will be number three, and because of some of the new rules, makes him vulnerable.
Daryl's question. I have this feeling that there's a huge future for Hendon in Detroit. How has his mobility looked post ACL? Am I wrong in thinking his passing traits are very similar to Goff, accuracy and timing, but with mobility? How much more dynamic could our run game be with a quarterback run threat?
Yeah, it's hard to tell because he only was introduced into the season late in the season. We're limited in what we can see in practice, and so there's not a lot of that we get to see. Unfortunately, we're not going to get that, full picture until we start getting him into camps. Now, there's going to be spring camps following the draft where we'll get a chance to look at him move, and we'll get a chance to look at him throw the ball. But it's really not going to be very intense. Unfortunately, to answer this question, we may have to wait all the way until training camp. From the short stints that we've seen, it's looked good, but we haven't really needed to see him cut it loose, so we haven't seen that. I agree. Accuracy, timing was very much a big part of his game in college. That's, I think, part of the appeal. as far as his mobility, I think that's a to be determined skill that we're gonna have to work on, or we won't get an answer to until probably the fall.
Yeah, we're going to have to learn as we all watch him in a way. You guys will get to see him first in training camp, but and in the mini camps, but nobody will see game action until we're all watching game action in the preseason, and there's only so much we can glean off of that. All right. Dan Howard, what kind of leap do you see Jahmyr Gibbs taking in year two, and how will that affect the snap count between Monty and Gibbs?
I think I expect him to take a big leap, right? I as he's settled in, I think he still hasn't hit his ceiling. We saw how he can be impactful at the end of last season. We saw how the team leaned on him at the end of last season. While the splits were even for the playoffs and with a couple weeks left in the season, there were a couple of games where we saw the Lions lean a little heavier on Gibbs. I think that's going to happen on occasion, and maybe more often than what we saw last year. But for the most part, I think the goal is to try and keep them as close to 50-50 as possible, because it's such a long season. You don't want to have a lot of wear and tear on just one guy. And so I do think the splits are going to stay close to even, but it wouldn't surprise me at all to see some of the end of season stuff where they tend to lean on Gibbs in certain games.
Craig Medeiros, oh, wait, keen observation. Sorry, I skipped it. Before the prevalence of the passing game in the lower levels of football, it was widely accepted that wide receivers took until year three for things to click. Given J-Mo's only started 1 year in college and played limited snaps in his first 2 years, is it reasonable to look at him on that same trajectory? I personally think that would be true. I mean, he was hurt for a big chunk of his first year here, and then last year with the gambling and the team was already kind of in a groove when he came back, like with the full off season and getting him up to speed. We should probably see a little bit more of him this year. Sorry, Eric, go ahead.
No, I completely agree with you. I completely agree. I think he's going to be he's an absolute starter. He's going to see his snaps increase. At the same time, his role isn't that of trying to be like a number one receiver. That job is St. Brown's. I do expect his role to increase. I do expect his snaps to increase. I do expect to him to see more opportunities to catch the ball and go with the ball. I just don't think it's going to be, he's not going to turn into one of these, top 20 receivers necessarily, but I don't think that they need him to be, especially when you have Sam Laporta in the mix as well. So I'm very high on what I think he's going to be able to do this season, but I mostly it's because of I think the intangibles that he has, his ability to take the roof off the defense, the ability to do what we saw in the San Fran game, where he's doing like end arounds that he's taking like for like 40-yard touchdown. Like that's going to be a huge part of what he does, and they're going to have design plays for him. I think they're going to be creative in how they get him more opportunities. So I'm in alignment with you guys here.
Is he going to return kicks?
That is such a fascinating question, right? Because of how the new playoff or the new playoff, the new kickoff systems work. How basically the kickers are back behind their tackling team, and they kick the ball. The return team has all their up guys up front so that there's this limited contact, but there's a opportunity to create rushing lanes essentially, because it's like instead of having like five guys on the line of scrimmage, you essentially are having like eight guys or nine guys on the line of scrimmage. And if they kick the ball to one of the two return options, and that return option happens to be J-Mo, all he has to do is like pick one hole and then he can break it and he can go. It's not like this layered system that we've seen in the past as they run down in different spots. So there's more opportunity for a player with speed who can basically has the vision to pick a hole and go. So what we saw on that end around in JMO from JMO and San Fran, like that just says, boy, he could do something like that. Then he could be an asset in this return game. I also think it provides an opportunity for Jahmyr Gibbs, to do the same thing because all he has to do is pick a hole and go. I don't know if they're going to use them at the same time. Both Gibbs and Jamo returned kicks in college, so it's not unfamiliar to them to, field the ball and then try and find a crease. The nice thing is for offenses, and the reason they're implementing this is because you don't have to have like multiple creases now. All you have to do is hit one and you got an opportunity if you have a lot of speed, and the Lions certainly have a lot of speed. It's going to be interesting to see how some of the players in this draft class that have a lot of speed but they and good vision, if their stock goes up because they could be potential return players like Malachi Corey, Xavier Leggett. Will those wide receivers with like, sub 4.4 speed and good vision, will they be more valuable because they could potentially return kicks? And there's a handful of guys like that. So it's a great question. And it's one that I'm excited to see answer.
Craig Medeiros, do you think they sign Taylor Decker to an extension? If not, hope they get his replacement in this year's draft.
Yeah, I'm with you, Craig. I think that I've suggested that they re-sign him for a while because he has a big contract. There doesn't seem to be any indications that they want to move on from him. He's a leader in the locker room. He's a leader for the organization. They put a lot on him, and he's delivered. So, got a big cap hit. You can reduce that cap hit, especially if you're looking to, extend Amon-Ra and Goff, like we talked about earlier. So, I absolutely think re-signing Taylor Decker is something that is, I would hope, is going to happen. At the same time, Brad Holmes is all about insurance plans, right? He's all about having succession plans. And so they don't really have one right now. So I do expect them to draft a potential replacement or a guy who is at least an upgrade to Matt Nelson, who they lost in free agency. And I know everyone likes Dan Skipper, and there's a fun story there with the whole reporting and stuff, right? But I don't think Dan Skipper's not a starting offensive tackle. They have two starting offensive tackles. And as we've talked about previously, you need three because if one of those guys gets hurt, you need somebody. And the fact that they haven't added anybody at this point is a pretty good indicator that they're looking to add one in the draft. If they can't land one in the draft, they'll probably sign a veteran like they did last training camp. But I fully expect offensive tackle to be high on the draft board.
Speaking of Taylor Decker with the expletive after it, he has a question. I didn't know he listened to the show. Always concerned about Ragnow's toe, but there are many other health concerns that we are worried about during the off season that may not be completely resolved by training camp.
Yeah, I mean, like Emmanuel Mosley, you don't know where his
Oh
knee status is
yeah,
at,
there you
right?
go.
So
No, yep.
you got to be a little bit worried about him, which puts, corner in play, right? You have a Meek Robertson, you have Carlton Davis, and so you're comfortable. At the same time, and they return Kendall Vildor, even though I think the role is for him to be a backup.
Right.
Emmanuel Mosley, his injury is one that you're concerned about. Is he going to be ready to go by the time training camp rolls around? The other guy that was injured late in the season was Khalif Raymond, but he was close to coming back. So I don't think there's going to be any lingering concerns around Khalif's injury. And so I'm not overly worried about that. We haven't heard anything because the league's not required to tell, or the NFL, the Lions, they're not required to put out injury reports during the offseason. And so we don't have any updates on him. We'll just have to kind of wait and see. But again, I think he was close to returning. So I don't think there's going to be any long-term, and there wasn't any long-term concern. So I don't expect there to be. Beyond Mosley, though. That's really about it. You got a
No.
couple of guys. I was gonna say you got a couple of guys that are coming off IR, right? So those guys are like
Shane
Shane
Zylstra.
Zylstra, Nate Sudfeld, Zonovan Knight, all those guys you're gonna want to pay attention to as well because they spent the whole season on IR. But I don't think there's anything that's like
You
there wasn't any injuries that I think there were that were like concerning long term.
did mention one more
Okay.
earlier, Hendon Hooker.
Oh
Yeah, the
yeah.
ACL injury. We don't know how he's going to bounce back from that, but you already covered that, so it's fine. You left it out of that answer. All right.
All right.
Ol' Christopher, I love Branch. He's a star. But is it just me, or did it feel like he had a lot of third down penalties in the passing game this year?
I felt like he did, and I think I feel like they were really highlighted because a lot of them came late in the season. Dallas, both playoff games, right? I feel like he, and in my opinion, a lot of those weren't justified, right? I think Branch is a phenomenal player. I agree with you that he is a star. Some of the penalties were justified. I think some of them were not. Sometimes the refs come out with flags and they come in bunches on a certain player if they're keeping an eye out for him. I do think that he got some unwarranted flags, but I absolutely agree. There, most of them came in unique situations and did happen on third down, especially late in the season. So those are, probably in your memory because they were so recent.
Swag Kazakage 93
It's
asks, I believe
I think it's Kazusaki. Like,
Kazasaki.
remember Jamal Williams did the Kazusaki stuff, right?
Oh, okay.
Oh, right.
Kazasaki. Yeah,
Yep.
I know. All right. I believe Brian Branch is the second best player on Detroit's defense. Do you agree?
Yes. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah,
I
I'd
mean, I
agree
agree.
too. Well, you
Who
can
do you?
argue Aleem McNeil could be number two, but I would say they're right. Brian Branch is number two.
I'm with you. I'm with you
All
100%. Yep, Hutchison, Branch, and then probably you're talking about Aleem.
right. And I never slice. The question is safety depth chart. Well, it's a short one.
Yeah. You have two starters with Kirby and Melifonwu, and then the talk has been about Branch expanding his role to include safety coverage as well. This is something that they tried to do with Branch earlier in the season, and then they backed it off when they wanted him to focus more on nickel. But essentially, you're a nickel like 80% of the time, and Branch was in that role 80% of the time on the field. But Branch is so good that they wanted to keep him on the field 100% of the time. And so at one point last season, when he wasn't in nickel, they were using him back at safety. And I do think that this is something that they're going to look at again this year. Having Branch slip back to safety when he's not in nickel is a very smart move, in my opinion. As we just talked about, second best player on the defense, and our I think by most people are going to agree with that. And but he's not a full-time starter. Like if there's an injury, like if Kirby or Iffy get injured, you're not going to put Branch at safety full time because he's so valuable in the nickel. Like you can use him, but you're still going to need somebody else that can play safety. And right now, I don't think that's Brandon Joseph, who is the only other safety on the roster, which means this is another position that they could look at the draft. This is also a position I fully expect them to try and fill a void by attaching a free agent, a veteran free agent. This is a market that has a ton of veteran free agents, safeties that were starters just last year. And I don't know why that market hasn't kicked off yet. I don't know, understand why so many of them were released. But the price is going down, and eventually one of these safeties is going to sign and set the market. And then I think a whole bunch of them will come off the board. I expect the Lions to be in the mix on that. What'll be interesting is, will the Lions set the market with one of these guys? That's something that I'm curious about because they got 3 weeks to figure something out with this.
All Lions Go to Heaven asks, which second-year player will take the biggest leap this year? On a related note, what is the ceiling for Laporta expectations?
It's okay, so let me take the latter part there first. I don't with Laporta, he was an all pro. Like,
Yeah,
I
how
don't know
much
how.
higher can it get?
Exactly. I think he can be more consistent. He could get more targets. It's hard to say if he will. My expectations are that he doesn't drop off, that he's at that same level. His blocking, I think, can get better. But his pass catching, his production, his touch, like all of those things from Laporta are, I think, repeatable. And I don't know how high he can go beyond that, right? Because like he was just so good in his first year. So I'm expecting him to get better, but maybe not in a way that we see statistically, right? I expect more, pass blocking. Maybe the PFF grade goes up because of pass blocking and stuff like that, run blocking, right? But that's where I expect his improvement to come. As far as the which one will take the biggest second, which second year player will take the biggest leap? My hope is that it's
Yeah, me.
Broderick Martin. Yeah,
Oh,
right.
I thought your hope would be it would be Jack Campbell, but Broderick
Well,
Martin's
no,
fine. That'd be
that's.
great if Broderick Martin did.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're probably right. I mean, I think a leap from Jack Campbell seems the most likely. My hope is that it's Broderick because, like with safety, defensive tackle only has a couple of guys and then some question marks behind it. And so, if Broderick is a guy who can take a next step, and DJ Reader can certainly help him facilitate that, I think Broderick is the guy who has the chance to make the biggest leap, right? Because he's going to go from being inactive to hopefully being part of the rotation. I think that's a bigger leap than maybe Jack can do, even though I think Jack will have a more important role.
Now, when you no, sorry.
No, I was going to ask
When
you
you
if you
talk
had
about
the.
Laporta, you're right. 86 catches, 889 yards, 10 touchdowns. Not if we're gonna see like an improvement, like a big bursting improvement, it'd be like 16 touchdown receptions and 100 catches. But if he does do something like that, if he does like score 16 touchdowns, like if you look at any other receiver or tight end that has like a big season like that, like it's not sustainable. You're not going to have 16 touchdowns every year. You just don't. Like you'll have a season like that, then you'll drop back down. So it would be like, yeah, it would just be like this aberration, huge season, but then would kind of start drawing back to the median, which we probably should expect is this 86 for 889, unless Amon-Ra St. Brown gets hurt, and then he's going to take on a lot more of a load. That's the only time you're going to see like a big spike in his stats. All right.
I'm with you statistically.
Frank Ribble, how many players over $10 million can you have on a roster, not including a quarterback making $50 million and two guys over $20 million? My thoughts are about five.
I don't even know if you can get five. Depending on the way that they distribute their contracts amongst their guys. Now, it's hard to say because when you're looking at average, their contract average versus their cap hit, it's going to fluctuate, right? There's some seasons where you're going to have a guy who averages 10, but only has a cap hit of like five, right? And then other times when he is going to have a cap hit of 15, right? It just depending on where he is in the contract part. And they spread those out with the big guys, the big high hit guys, because you don't want to ever get overwhelmed with one, like five guys all taking up a significant amount of cap all at once. Currently, Goff makes 32, Decker makes 19, Ragnow makes just under 13, Hutchinson just under 10, Sewell and Anzalone are both in the 7 millions. Montgomery's under 7. And then everyone else is under 6, right? So at that point, right? So that's what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six guys, right? And that's making over 7, not necessarily this 10, the 10 mark that Frank's asking about. So obviously this answer is going to change a year from now as well, right? Because as the cap allotment goes up, you're going to have players making bigger contracts. But I think with the way the cap is now, you're going to have your quarterback, and then you're probably going to have like five guys that make over 7 million. Can you expand that more? I think you can, but it comes at a cost because as you increase the salary of one player, you're reducing the salary. You have to reduce the salary somewhere else on the roster. If you have a roster that has a lot of depth that are still on rookie contracts, kind of like the Lions do, you can make that move. But as you start giving extensions to these guys that you've drafted, like your Penei Sewells, your Amon-Ra, your Alee McNeils, it's going to get a lot harder to, keep a roster that has, seven guys making over 10 million because the rest of your roster is going to have to be filled out with like younger players. And that's not always the way it works. So I think it's a question that doesn't have a clean answer, and it's also one I think that is going to change in the near future. But for now, I'd say you're looking at like 5 to 7 guys that can make over 7 million. That's probably the best answer I can give.
Moving over to the free agency category, first questions from Rob Turner. Do you see any moves coming before the draft? You kind of mentioned it.
Yeah, I mentioned safety, right? And that's the
Right.
big one, right? They said they were looking for a corner. Since then they signed Vildor, but I don't think that's the corner they were
That was
saying
the
that they were
move.
looking at. I don't know. I mean, maybe it was, but I maybe it isn't. Some of these veterans are going to wait until the draft to see how things shake out to then determine where they want to land. And that could very well be what's happening with the safety market. Like these guys are like, if I'm Quandre Diggs, I don't want to go to the Lions if the Lions draft a safety in the first 3 rounds, probably, right? But if the Lions don't draft safety in the first 3 rounds, then he maybe is more inclined to sign back with Detroit. I mean, maybe 3rd round. Well, I mean, there's asterisks on all this stuff, but I do think a lot of the safeties are maybe waiting. At the same time, if someone signs, we'll see where it goes. But let's say a guy like Stephon Gilmore, a corner, like he's not going to want to sign right now because at this stage, it's more beneficial to him to wait, see how the draft shakes out, and then talk to a team that is maybe that's a playoff contender that maybe didn't get that corner they wanted to get in the draft. And then the opportunity plus the money is going to be there for him for that. So
Right.
there's not necessarily a move that's coming, but if one came, I would expect it to be like a player in the secondary.
Eric J. Mawson has a very detailed question. Getting comp picks is something that Baltimore and San Francisco do a lot, but currently the Lions don't. Do you think the long-term plan is to keep building up the roster and eventually lose players to increase comp picks down the road, or just something the Lions don't care about? Detailing the question, what I mean by this question is Detroit's roster is not strong enough to let players walk, but if Brad keeps drafting well, eventually can't keep everyone. We'll end up losing more free agents than signing, but it takes time to build that deep roster. More year 5, 6, 7 of the quote unquote plan. Does that make sense?
It does. And I do agree that the Lions aren't quite deep enough to be at that stage, right? Baltimore and San Fran have been building rosters for like 6, 7 years, 8 years, right? Baltimore's been building their roster for the last 20 years, right? It feels like. But when you get the roster to a stage where you have your superstars signed, and you have them under contract, and then you have a lot of depth players who are on rookie contracts, like the Lions currently have, it affords you the opportunity to let players go. We kind of saw that with Jonah Jackson. The issue is they're not quite there with filling out their roster to not sign someone to offset that Jonah Jackson departure to where they would get a comp pick, right? So they're not quite there yet, but they're headed in that direction. And so I don't think they don't care about it. I just don't think they're at the stage where they can make it work right now because it's more important for them to stay competitive than it is to receive a draft pick a year from now, right? So I think they'll go there. I think that's part of every team's ideal plan to have a roster that's deep enough that you can lose guys and be unaffected. They're just not there yet. Like the
Right.
it's I think the plan is yes to get there, but not yet. It's we'll see how it plays out over the next couple of years.
MTU Noodle 96 asks, it seems that we are now using the void years on a contract strategy to help the current year, but isn't that just kicking the can down the road for continuous dead money and lessening our available cap in future years? Curious as to the reasoning strategy behind this. No, I agree with MTU Noodle 96, you know that from they hate future dead money.
Sure. So the best way I can try and explain it is the extending of future years is essentially like putting off your debts into the future when you know that your your available money is going to be higher, right? So if I owe a player $1,000 signing bonus, okay, or whatever, let's just call it a thousand, and I can pay them that thousand right now when I have $2,000 available. I can pay them that thousand right now. But if I add on a void year, I can pay them that thousand next year. Then I can keep my 2,000, okay? Whatever money I don't spend of my 2,000, I can carry it into next year when I also get another 2,000 for my new year. Plus, I get a raise on that 2,000, and I get to keep whatever I left from this previous year. So I may end up with $3,000 next year because of rolling money over because of an increase in my $2,000 salary cap. So now I have $3,000 to pay that $1,000. So it costs me a lower percentage of my money to pay that $1,000 in the future, as opposed to paying it now. And that's what the logic is that if I pay these contracts on these voided years into the future, with the salary cap going up $10, $20 million a year, the percentage of what it's going to cost compared to what I have is going to be much less, and therefore more easily affordable for me to pay off in future years. And so that's why these teams are doing it. The Lions are not alone. There's a lot of teams that are adding these in. We see with Brock Wright's contract, the contract that San Fran gave him had three voided years on it, just specifically for this reason, because they wanted to spread the cap hit out in order to make it more affordable now. And that's the idea. I understand wanting to pay your bills when the bill comes, you want to pay it
I'll
and get
have
it off the books.
$4,000 next year instead of
Well,
$3,000.
right. But if you need that $2,000 right now and you lose half of it because you're paying that one now, it doesn't matter if you have $4,000 next year if you're hindering yourself this year, right? You don't want to, with GMs, they never want to be in a situation where they don't have available money to make a move. And so that's what they're doing, especially knowing that they can just carry that money over to next year anyways. Then that's what they're going to do. Plus, it wouldn't be 4,000, it would still be three because you wouldn't have any money to roll over, right? You'd still have more money next year, but if you paid it off this year, the issue is you'd lose some of your flexibility now. And with the NFL season, things being unpredictable, you need that available pot because look, remember, every time a player goes on IR, you still pay that player, and that player's contract still counts against the cap. Then you have to sign a new player that costs money against the cap as well. So every time you lose a guy to IR, you actually add $1 million onto your salary cap because you have to replace him and you don't get to lose the cost on the IR player. So if you have 10 players go on IR during the season, you're going to add almost $10 million in free agent and in money just to like make up that loss. And so you have to have like $10 to $15 million of workable money in season. And if you don't have that, then you have to start restructuring contracts. And that's when you start getting into problems because you're mortgaging the future that way. It's basically a way of trying to just keep their availability, keep as much money available as they can now, knowing that they can just take that money into the future with them if they want, anyways. So I get it. I get that people don't like it. At the same time, I totally understand why teams do it.
In your past, Eric, did you sell mortgage refinancing?
No. My
Okay.
wife actually handles all of that because she's the smarter one.
All right. Well, I still don't like it. I heard
Oh,
your
I hear you.
reasoning,
Yeah.
but I don't know. I could be wrong. All
No,
right.
no.
Anyhow.
Look, everyone's got their own opinion, right? I mean, there's a lot of people that share the same opinion with MTU and you. They'd rather just be free and clear and work with a clean slate.
Next segment, draft strategy. Jay Cooper asks, what do you think best player available means to Brad Holmes? I've heard some people say that they think it means he may take a tight end at 29, but I don't agree.
Yeah, I do think there are certain position groups that are going to be off the board, Right. Like running back, you got six guys, including all four that you had last year. At tight end, you're bringing back all four tight ends. At quarterback, you're bringing back three of your four quarterbacks, right? Like those three positions are not like if you drafted somebody, you'd be putting yourself in a tough spot. You wouldn't be necessarily having a significant upgrade to your team, even if you took a guy in the first round. Like you're going to upgrade that spot, but it's not going to be as impactful as you as if you were to upgrade it somewhere else, right? And so I don't think like tight end is something that they're going to consider in the first round. Now, could they consider tight end on day two or day three? Absolutely, because as we talked about earlier, like with the new special teams things, you're going to need big bodies that can block, and that's what tight ends are. I'm fully expecting them to keep four tight ends this year because of the new changes on special teams, and so you want to add, and you'll probably want to add another body to add some competition to push, Shane Zylstra for that tight end four spot, especially with him coming off the ACL. Like you don't know exactly where he's going to be at. Can he return to form? Is he going to be ready? And so I do expect him to add a tight end, but not at 29. I don't think that's necessary. That would be a smart move. And I think Brad's under the same. He understands. He talks about not drafting with a depth chart in front of them. Well, look, I don't need a depth chart in front of me either to know where this roster's at and to know where the depth is, right? And Brad's the same way. His best player available strategy, I think, is essentially that. It's I'm going to take the best player that I have on my board and then put a little asterisk on that and say within reason, right? Because I do think there is a within reason standpoint, and I don't want to step on the next question's toes here, but maybe I'll expand more on what I'm saying here when we get to that here for a second.
It will be interesting what happens in this year's draft because the argument could be made over his first three drafts, certainly for the first two, but even for this last one, is that yes, he still could take best player available because they weren't deep enough anywhere to, consider themselves ready to go at any position. So
Certainly.
even this last year, we're taking Jahmyr Gibbs. We just signed David Montgomery, but all these te every team needs two good running backs. So it wasn't that
Yep.
shocking of a pick, and
Right.
So
I think the Jack
this
Campbell
is
pick was more shocking, right?
the, yeah, I guess, but at the same time, the linebackers were weak, seen as a weak position before the emergence of Barnes, and so it's not surprising. This year will be the first year where we see the testing of Brad Holmes's true strategy when it comes to drafting. Right, Carlos Goodman, as the Lions are in win now mode, and we know in the draft that they will still prioritize quote unquote football players over need, but don't they need to factor in depth for 2025 if, for example, Lee McNeil becomes next offseason's Jonah Jackson?
100%. They will be factoring in what's happening in 2025, right? And when you look at the 2025 roster, they have guys in place at almost every position, assuming that you're able to retain the guys that you're expecting to retain. Like Penei Sewell is going to get his fifth year option. If Amon-Ra gets his extension, if Jared Goff gets his extension, Aleem McNeil, if they all get their extensions, then you're going to have a starter at pretty much every spot except one. And it's the same starting spot that's you're looking at in this year, which is do they have a wide receiver X? Like who's their third starting a wide receiver? Beyond that, they're going to have a lot of guys in place, but they got to re-sign guys. Like Carlton Davis is probably going to get a contract extension. So is right. There's a lot of guys that are probably in that range. Like we're talking about like five, six guys that are probably in that range. What happens at wide receiver? Does Taylor Decker get an extension? And what do you do at guard? Because is Zeitler going to be, is how is he, is he going to be too old? Because he's going to be
Gonna
like,
age out.
right. Yeah, exactly. So like offensive line, wide receiver, those are your real big question marks if you sign the guys that we all expect them to re-sign. So when you're looking at the draft, that's why you could see These wide receivers and offensive linemen appeal to the Lions. When I did my most recent mock draft, my first two players that I selected were wide receiver and an offensive lineman. And a part of that's because I'm looking at the 2025 roster and saying, where are the holes, right? And we can't predict, or we can predict, but we don't know for certain, like where they're going to re-sign guys. But it sure seems like if they re-sign the guys we expect them to re-sign, they're not going to have a lot of starter immediate impact holes, but you still got to re-sign. Like, you still got like six guys you got to re-sign in order to do that. If they are have a guy that they're unsure about, like let's say they're unsure about Ify because he has this injury history, right? And they don't re-sign him to a contract. They're willing to play out the year with Ify to see how he performs, and if he performs, then they'll address his contract situation in the offseason. I could totally see that happening. And so if they're not sure with Ify, I could absolutely see them draft a safety like on day two and be like, we don't have a clear role for him right now, but we're going to draft a guy that can be a starter a year from now. I could see that same strategy at guard. I could see that same strategy at wide receiver. And so there are a few of these positions that we need to look at and say, okay, it makes sense that these guy that why they might address offensive tackle or safety earlier than what we expect, because there's no hole now, but there is a hole in 2025.
David Eakins asks, a lot of people see wide receiver as a significant need. In terms of targets, do you think Gibbs and Laporta see an increased role next season, lessening the need to spend high draft capital on another receiver?
I am of the mindset that you do need a wide receiver. And there are like there's other people that are absolutely with, as David suggests, there are absolutely people that don't think it's that as big of a priority because they have so many other skill players. But in my opinion, you need another body that can be wide receiver five. I'm sorry, target number five in the pecking order, and be like a wide receiver three. Logic says, or traditional NFL logic says, that it should be a starting X. This should be this 6'2", 200-pound wide receiver who can, have a big body over the middle and can, doesn't have to be a star, doesn't have to be like your Calvin Johnson, right? But you need a guy who is a bigger body, who can catch balls, be reliable. Even if he's fifth in the target order, more likely he'll be like third or fourth, but still, he's comfortable being fifth if he needs to be. So I think you absolutely need that. I think it's one of the more glaring holes that the Lions have because they don't have a lot of glaring holes. So this one is an obvious one to me. So I do think it's a priority. But I also understand the people that aren't in that same mindset. But for me personally, I think adding a big-bodied wide receiver is something they need to do. And the fact that they haven't really gone after it in free agency, other than trying to re-sign Josh Reynolds, tells me they're probably looking to the draft to fill that, right? What do we always talk about? We always talk about follow the money, right? If you look at how much they pay a player, that's how much you can see how much they value a player. A lot of people are penciling Donovan Peoples-Jones in as that wide receiver X, right? Donovan Peoples-Jones got $1.3 million with $125,000 guaranteed. Does that say we think you're a starter? Is that what that money says to you? It doesn't to me, right? To me, it's like it's we see you as Marvin Jones, right? We think you're a good
A
wide
depth
receiver four or
piece, yeah.
five. Yeah, exactly. Can he be a starter? He has been a starter in the past,
They need him for a week or two to be.
right? And he stepped up in Khalif's role when Khalif got injured last year. But if they thought he was going to be a starter, he'd be getting a lot more money, and they would show it. They would pay to show their intentions with him. With Josh Reynolds' deal in Denver was pretty reasonable, and I was surprised the Lions didn't offer something similar. And so again, if they didn't offer Josh Reynolds the money he got in Denver, that again is a big indicator to me that they weren't willing to pay for that third starting wide receiver role, which again points to me that I think that this is a position they're going to address in the draft.
Scapegoated Josh Reynolds. All right. Lyle Clough, does Josh Reynolds' departure affect the Lions' wide receiver plans, or would it have been a need regardless? Did his departure prompt the Lions to match Wright's 49ers option? Well, you kind of addressed the first part
The
of that
first part,
question, but the second part, that's a good question.
I don't think that it impacted them matching Wright's numbers, because Wright's numbers were, again, also very reasonable. They were willing to pay Brock Wright
An
$3
extra million bucks.
million. They were willing to pay him $3 million this year, and then it probably would have been more than $3 million next year if they would have needed to go through the process again. Instead, the contract that they got, he makes less than $2 million in year one, less than $2 million from a cap hit perspective, less than $3 million in year two. So he's making less in his first 2 years than they would have been willing to pay him previously. So this is a good contract for the Lions, and it made total sense to match. I think the Josh Reynolds situation did not impact retaining Wright. I think Wright is a guy that they like. They have a
It's a
role
Dan
for.
Campbell situation. He loves Brock Wright.
He's a key special teamer. With the special teams changes, he's going to be even more valuable on special teams. And he's your tight end too. And he's a guy who has stepped up and been your starter in the past. It's a separate decision for me, easy decision as well.
John Johnson's question, roster construction. If it was your draft, would you target an offensive tackle with inside flexibility, or would you prefer a guard with center flexibility?
I mean, that's a great question, right? Because this draft is loaded with guys that can do one or the other, right? My preference is to find I think the bigger priority is to find a tackle with guard flexibility as opposed to a guard with center flexibility. At the same time, I think the talent of this draft is on the ladder, is on the guys that can play the interior spots. So wouldn't be surprising at all to see the Lions draft a guy who can play guard and center earlier than a guy that can play tackle, because there's more value based on the talent of this draft class to get that position early. But from a need standpoint, I absolutely think getting that tackle, a guy who can play tackle, is a bigger priority because you don't have depth beyond your starters. And so for me, the priority is the tackle guard, but that's not necessarily where the talent matches up.
And for me, if the good teams, you've noted, and now the Lions can start looking at themselves getting mashed into that group. Every year, there's a good center, right, in the draft. And one of the good teams always ends up at that center, and that center never needs to develop. They always start right away, and they're always good. The Lions are best off, like, you could argue the Lions are best off being like, well, if Frank Ragnow retires after this year, which he may not, he still might have several good
I think
years.
he's got a few, I think.
Yeah. But if that situation did occur, it's like, well, we'll just take the best center available next year because there's always the best center available next year.
It's true. So, like, the top five guys, offensive linemen, like not pure tackles, but like the guys with like the flexibility. The first two, Fuaga and Fatu'anu, they're both tackle guards. I also expect both of them to be off the board before
Yeah,
the
they'll be
Lions are
gone.
even picking, right? And then the next three are all guys that play guard center, right? Powers Johnson, Graham Barton, Zach Frazier, they're all guys that can play center guard. So, like, again, from where the Lions will be picking in the pool of players I expect to be there at the first round anyway, they're interior guys that can play center. And then as you get deeper, you get into guys that can, there's more guys that can do both. And so, we'll see how it plays out, but there's a lot of really good centers in this class. But I don't think it's as pressing a need, especially with Graham being able to kick in the center if they need to. It's not ideal. You'd like a little bit more depth. At the same time, that OT3 spot is just staring at me, and I don't have an answer for who it is. And I expect them to address that.
G-Day asks, what position do the Lions need to upgrade the most still? More bodies or talent? Cornerback, edge, wide receiver. Also, with the addition of Reader, does that lower defensive tackle on need? We have Levi, Martin, Reader, and Aline.
I think it lowers the need, but I still think the need is there because you rotate your defensive tackles. You need a third defensive tackle to step up. And right now, you're either counting on Levi, who hasn't not returned to form, or Martin, who hasn't proved anything. So I do think a third defensive tackle is still a priority. A third offensive tackle is still a priority. A future guard is a priority. A potential starter at corner and a starter at wide receiver is still a possibility. The thing with edge is that it's not as big of a priority from a depth perspective. At the same time, in the NFL, if you have the opportunity to upgrade your edge, you tend to take it because it's hard to find, right? And it's such an important piece of what you do on defense. So from a depth standpoint, edge, wide receiver, offensive line, defensive line, those, I'm sorry, corner, wide receiver, offensive and defensive line, that's where the you want to have more depth and more sustainability. Edge is something where if the right guy comes along, you should take him.
All right, Kevin Green asks, it seems as though the cornerback concerns have quieted for the most part, yet we are one injury away from a repeat of last year. How do you
Yeah.
think Brad Holmes addresses that? 1 year contract on a vet or early draft pick?
I think it will be a draft pick. But I'm not ruling out the vet either because one, Brad's not going to reach. He's not going to reach on a guy, right? Like he's not going to look at the corner class and be like, "Man, I got to add a corner in this draft class, and if one isn't there, I'm going to reach for him." That's not Brad Holmes' style. So that leaves adding the vet on the table. I believe his preference would be to add depth through the draft. Now, they've got seven corner outside corners under Ross on the roster right now. Couple of those guys are practice squad guys, couple of those guys are depth guys, and then you have three guys that are challenging to start. One of them, though, is currently injured. And so yeah, one injury and you could be in a bad way pretty quick. You could be turning back to Kendall Vildor if Mosley's not ready. And I don't think the Lions want to do that. I know Lions fans definitely don't want that to happen. So I do think they're going to try and add to this spot. And the ideal way would be to add a guy in the draft that has a high ceiling that you can develop and not need to push. At the same time, if that guy doesn't fall, then I think the backup plan is to go after one of these veterans that is waiting to see how the draft plays out. And that Stephon Gilmore, that type of guy makes a lot of sense to add to this unit if they can.
Latino Heat, now that the NFL is using the UFL kickoff rules, how much more important is the UFL for the Lions, and should we expect them to add someone from the UFL at the end of their season? Thanks.
That's a good question. I don't think it's I don't think the UFL players are going to matter as much just because I think the scheme is something that players can learn quick. And the NFL players are more talented. They spend more time. They have a lot more access to resources. I don't think it's going to take long for them to figure out how to transition from what they were doing on special teams to what they will be doing on special teams. It might change. I think it will change. It will more change the style of player that you're keeping on the roster, as opposed to needing to get someone with experience on in this certain style of special teams. So, I don't think the UFL player pool is more important, but it's more about like you're watching because you're trying to learn strategy and come up with little tricks. So Dave Fitt will be watching a lot of UFL.
They will add someone from the UFL at the end of their
Nice.
season, for at least for
Nice.
training camp.
Oh yeah, you think a
Right?
kicker?
Won't they? Didn't they add? Well, I would, yeah. Well, they've been in contact with him apparently,
Right.
right? Or maybe somebody
Riley
ran
Green.
into him somewhere.
Yeah.
They probably should consider him. I don't know. Did they see? I missed if they played yesterday.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was at my nephew's
Yeah,
party.
you were
I didn't
busy
notice
too.
that.
So, all right, it'll be interesting to watch the rest of the year. A lot of guys have big legs, and he did kick 264 yarders in a row. And maybe that's repeatable, and maybe that's repeatable in front of 70,000 people instead of 10. We'll see. And if he is that good, hopefully the Lions, then hopefully he likes it around here, and the Lions reach out to him. We'll see what happens there. But I'm just saying, somebody will end up. It might not even be him, but you know, they'll bring in
Sure.
somebody from the UFL to be on the to try out for the team. They did Maurice Alexander, right? Wasn't he a USFL veteran?
Oh boy, that's a great question. He might have been was he
Or
XFL
an
or U?
XFL, one or the
Yeah,
other.
yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, one of them.
Right. Now they're all one. All right. Mike S. Heard on mock NFL Network that the picks between 50 and 25 and 50 are all interchangeable. How many first round grades are there? How far Lions can realistically move up to? And if so, what players would they do it for?
All right, so I will be
Do this
talking more about the
personally.
players in a second. All right. Oh, well, so okay, I
How
haven't
many first round
graded.
grades? Okay, you haven't right. Then forget my quote. Keep going.
Okay, yeah, I haven't graded it, but typically what you end up hearing is that there are anywhere from like 15 to 25 players on a year-to-year basis that end up with like what they call first round grades, which means they're players that teams have valued. The issue here is that those 15 to 25 players are going to vary from team to team, right? Like one team may have Brian Branch as a top 15 player, like the Lions did, while another team doesn't because they don't view him in the same way or can't use him in the same way. And there's going to be players that are going to go in the top 15 that the Lions aren't even going to have on their board because they don't fit the scheme or the attitude or the mentality or of the organization. And so, yes, there's like 25 first round grades, but that's all like situational. Like the Lions are going to have, they're going to have 15 to 20, but we don't know who those 15 people are. And we don't know if those 15 people are going to be the first. It's not, it's almost a guarantee they aren't going to be the first 15 picks. So I don't I try not to get, I try not to get too tied up, and I encourage the same. Don't get tied up on like who is, you know, has a first round grade. And when a lot of, when draft analysts out there are saying, I have 20 first round grades on players, that's great. I can appreciate that. But again, when you're not gearing your board to a specific team, it's hard to see exactly what the value in that is. Like last year, the Lions said they had 14, I think it was either 14 or 15 guys that they had first round grades on, but one of them they got, but the two of them they got in the second
Four of them.
round, right? Yeah. So like, so yes, it's hard when looking at these like national statements, and when looking at these national perspectives and then applying it to the Lions, because the Lions don't follow that kind of standard protocol, and every team is so unique and so different. So, but the idea is of these like top 50, top 60 players that are on the consensus like board, 25 of those guys are, you know, going to have a first round grade for somebody. With the Lions, they may only have 15. But again, after that, it's pretty standard for them to kind of be closer and more interchangeable. It just depends on how deep the class is. Last year, the class wasn't as deep at the top, and they had a lot more depth in the middle part. And I think you see something similar this year. Like most of the top talent is on the offensive side of the ball this year. And then once you kind of get past that wave, there's a huge collection of guys that are going to be closely graded from a national perspective, all within that group between 25 and 50. But that's pretty standard. I mean, that's something we see all the time. So it's one of the reasons that why when I organize my board, I try and organize my board both from a national perspective where I give you like the national rankings, but then I also try and gear the board towards the Lions itself so that I can try and say, I can try and illustrate this guy is getting a high grade nationally, but I don't know if he fits with the Lions. So I think he's going to be further down the board. And there's going to be a handful of guys like that that you're going to see going early in mock drafts. But I don't think they're going to be, they don't fit with the Lions. And so I'm going to have them lower on my Lions based board. So Unfortunately, Mike, I don't think I did a really good job answering that question, because I don't it's hard to exactly ascertain what the Lions board looks like compared to the rest of the NFL, and then compared to the analyst boards that are out there. As far as moving up, I think the Lions are absolutely going to consider moving up, moving back. That's always going to be an option for them. Whether or not they move up will be dictated on how their board falls. So if they have 15 guys that they have first round grades on, and 10 of them are off the board by pick 20, they're sitting there saying, well, look, we got five guys we like, and we got to wait 9 spots. How big do we want to jump up? Or how big of a grade discrepancy is it between pick guy number 10 and guy number 15? And is it worth it for me to jump up and try and grab guy number 10? So there's a lot of factors that go in. So I think it's realistic to that they could move, but I can't give you a percentage. And it'd be really hard for me to name guys. Like, there's a couple of guys that I like that I think, oh, this guy fits. Like, for example, Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo. I think he would be the corner from Toledo. He's tremendous. Most people think he's going to go in the top half of the draft in the first 15 picks. You know, he'd be great. He'd be a perfect fit for Lions. I expect him to be high on the Lions board. But would the Lions go up and get him? And how far would they have to move up? That's really hard to say, especially with Brad Holmes, who is wildly unpredictable.
Right. All right. Nate Savage. Oh, wait, 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 wait. Dan Pask question. Which position group do you feel holds the best to the day two picks if not picked on day one? Thanks.
It's ironically two of the biggest needs that the Lions have, which is wide receiver and offensive line. A lot of talent on the offensive line and a lot of talent in wide receivers. Now, it having depth at wide receiver is going to become commonplace in the NFL drafts for the next several years because of how college football works. But it's rare to have this level of depth on the offensive line, in my opinion, because we've talked about this in the past a ton. Offensive linemen aren't getting developed at the way they need to in college to be ready to jump right into the NFL because of the college schemes that they run. So having this level of college, this level of offensive linemen available on day two, it is an unusual set of circumstances, in my opinion. And so that's really where I think the sweet spot is. Like, you don't want to get out of day two without having an offensive lineman that can be an offensive lineman for the future, whether it's a starting role or backup or whatever, or insurance for a tackle. You've got to, in my opinion, add an offensive lineman because the depth is better than what you would see in most years. You're going to have, there's maybe, I don't know, there's, you're going to see a lot of running backs going in day two, but that's not something I think the Lions are necessarily going to be interested in on day two. And yeah, I mean, that's it. I think that's where the majority of depth is, wide receiver and offensive line. You're gonna have talent, but you know, like positions like corner too. So I wouldn't be surprised, but the really good players that you're gonna find on day two, in my opinion, are gonna be wide receivers and offensive line.
Nate Savage asks, what's the highest you'd be willing to trade up in the first round if the draft board isn't falling our way early on? What player or position do you think they might be willing to throw our draft capital at to do so?
If you're trading up for a player, you're in an ideal world, you're hoping you're putting that player into a starting position. But as we have seen from Brad Holmes, he does not care, right? Like, he traded up from 32 to 12 to take J-Mo, knowing that J-Mo wasn't going to play half the season. So it's hard to say. Like, my gut says it would be the positions we've been talking about: corner, offensive lineman, wide receiver, edge. Those all make a ton of sense to trade up. And how high they trade up, I think, is completely up in the air. Could they go all the way up to 12 again? Well, they sure seem to like picking 12. They've done it each of the last 2 years. At the same time, Brad is completely unpredictable with this stuff. And so it's really hard to figure out what he's going to do. a guy like Mitchell, who I just brought up from Toledo, like he's a guy I would trade up for personally. I think he's that good. Would I trade up to 12? Yeah, probably not. Not to 12. I think the cost would be too significant to go up that far. What I don't even know if I trade up to 15, but that's kind of where I think he's going to go. He's going to go in that range. So it's a hard question to answer purely from a fact that the guys I really like, I expect to go early. But if one of them slides into the 20s, I could absolutely see him trying to trade up into the early part of the 20s, and giving up a minor expense, maybe a future pick, maybe a day three pick to try and move up to get a guy that they think is slipping. Could it be Mitchell? If it is, I'd go get him. But there's a couple guys. I mean, there's a couple guys like that that I think if they're in the if they fall, they'd be worth it. Like the two guards or the two guard tackles we talked about, Fuaga and Fatuanu. Like if either of those guys slide into the 20s, I'd consider that too, because I think those again, both those guys I think are top 15 players, and they would be top 15 players for the Lions, and so I'd consider them for sure. So, but it's hard to tell. It's until it happens. It's hard to see where Brad Holmes would reach.
Kirk asks, when a trade in the draft takes place, do the GM share who they are picking with the pick they received to move up? Like, did Green Bay know we wanted Brian Branch?
No, they do not share opinions, right? They do not talk about the fact that I want to play this guy or I want to pick this guy. They just are essentially like, this is the pick that I want, and this is what I'm willing to offer you for it. They're not going to tell you this is the guy I'm taking or anything like that, because you don't want to tip your hand. So yeah, no, they keep who they're taking under lock and key, and hope they can put themselves in a position to get the guy they want.
We all saw the movie Draft Day.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Going on to the draft prospect section, Michael Lucchese asks, what first round talents do you believe the media is much higher on than teams, leading to them falling to the Lions at 29, resulting in the Lions fans being upset when Brad inevitably passes on them? Well, that's a good point. I always that just because the media loves these guys and Lions don't take them doesn't mean it's an abject disaster.
Man, that's a good question. It's also a hard question to answer, right?
Right, we don't know who that is.
So a guy like Chop Robinson from Penn State, wildly athletic, should absolutely go in the first round because of he's athletic. But his production is not great. Hasn't been great. And there's not a real clear answer on why that production isn't great. In my opinion, Chop is too athletic to slide out of the first round. The way the NFL operates, it makes sense. He's got an untapped level of potential as well that I think is going to appeal to teams. At the same time, if you have questions about his production and you want to pass on him, I could see that happening as well. And so a guy like Chop, I think everyone expects to go in the first round. But if teams don't like that for some reason, I could see them passing, including the Lions. Latu, same, another edge rusher from UCLA, could arguably be the best edge rusher in this class, but he has a neck injury that caused him to medically retire from Washington. Could they look at that and say, I'm going to pass on him because I'm worried about that neck? Absolutely. If they get the medical reports back and they don't like him, they could absolutely pass on a guy like that. So there's a few guys like that in this class that you could look at and be like, whoa, there's something going on there. And I think fans would be mad if like a perceived first round talent is there and the Lions don't take him. Nate Wiggins, the Clemson corner, one of the best cover corners out there. I don't think he fits the Lions scheme at all. And again, this is my opinion, but I don't think he fits. I don't, I think he's too soft against the run and he doesn't have that mentality. Tremendous cover player. But if he falls and the Lions are on the clock and he's there and he looks like he's a great value, but he doesn't fit their system or he doesn't fit their mentality and they pass on him, again, I think people might be mad about something like that because this is, again, a player that should go in the first round because of his coverage ability. Yet I don't know how he fits. Now, again, I'm just speculating here because I'm not in the interviews with the team and I don't know how, you know, I haven't interviewed him. I haven't asked him the questions. I haven't seen how the Lions look at him. And so maybe they interviewed him and they absolutely love his mentality. But like from what I can kind of see and what I'm learning about him, I don't know if he fits. So that's what you're looking at. Like there's a couple of these guys that maybe don't fit the system that could slide medically, from a mentality standpoint, or maybe from a production standpoint. And I could absolutely see the Lions passing on them if they aren't guys that fit exactly the way the Lions want.
All right, John Geldermans asked, who do you not want the Lions to take in the first two rounds? Or what would be the worst way the board could fall to the Lions and they do not get a trade offer at 29? Now, M. Boucher has a similar question. Who, if any, are players you see being mocked to Detroit that you don't want here?
Now, now I have a hard time going negative. You
You are
know
very
this.
positive.
I do. I'm always trying to look at how guys fit. That's the goal. But like, okay, I just mentioned Nate Wiggins, right? I don't think Nate Wiggins stylistically fits. And so if he doesn't fit, he's a guy that I would be surprised because it's harder for me to see how he fits. So if they drafted him, it wouldn't, it right now, I would say I would be surprised because I don't see the stylistic fit. But then once he's drafted, my immediate thought process becomes, okay, why did they draft him? What are the skills that he has that would appeal to the Lions and make them make the move? So, excuse me. So I don't know if I would. Even though I don't think he fits, I don't think I would ever like not like the pick, or I wouldn't be like, oh, that's terrible. Like, you know, throw it because because my immediate instinct and my nature is they like him. Let me figure out why they like him, right? So if they took a quarterback, I'd probably hate that. If they took a running back, I'd probably hate that, right? But like, there's a bunch of wide receivers that I think are good. If they took a tight end, I'd probably hate that. But I look, if they took an offensive tackle, it wouldn't be my preference, but I would totally understand it, right? Especially no, not knowing what Taylor Decker's future is. So I don't know if there's necessarily like a pick I would hate. But I definitely have some guys on my list that I don't think fit. And I named a couple. Like, I'm not a big Chop Robinson fan, but I totally understand the appeal. I totally understand the upside, and I totally understand why the Lions would take him. Even though for me, I prefer a guy with more production. If they, you know, so it's I don't want to like I don't have like specific names that I'm like where I'm like this guy would be terrible. But there's definitely guys that you'll see if you subscribe to the Patreon, you have access to my draft board. You'll see guys that I have ranked lower than what they should be, and that would be the good indicator of guys that I think are maybe not fits, right? And I named a couple, but we'll dig into that question. Well, I'm sorry, we'll dig more into that as the draft board gets finalized over the next few weeks.
Bossy Furball asks, what do you think of Keon Coleman as a prospect and a fit in Detroit? Draft people have very different opinions on him. That is interesting with Coleman. You know, like that there is some widely varying opinions. He's a top-notch athlete. He's a big receiver. He's had good success in college. You know,
Yeah,
what do you think about him as a prospect?
I like him. I like him a lot. I know that 40 time has scared people off, but his we've talked previously about how his GPS score is on point, like how he is in when he's in phase and playing, how he plays faster than he runs in a static straight line, right? Big body, exactly what they need. The ability to make big play catches. That's ex something exactly that what they need. If they took him at, I know that this people have soured on him a bit. A lot of boards, a lot of the national boards have him ranked like in the 40s. If they took him at 29, I'd be totally okay with that. Like I am a, he fits what they need. And while he doesn't blow the doors off, he's not going to blow the doors off of you in a, if you ask him to run in a straight line, you don't need him to be like, let it, he can go over the middle. He can make one-handed catches. He can make all these wild catches. He is highly productive. Absolutely in play for me at 29.
TJ, yes, what are your thoughts on finding Aleem's replacement in the draft? This team has many talented players to pay, and it looks to me that McNeil might be the odd man out.
That
Fisk?
would,
No, that's Fisky, sorry.
well, or Newton, yeah. Those two guys, both Newton and Fisky are guys that absolutely. Those are Byron Murphy's your first probably defensive tackle on the board, in my opinion, and then Newton's right after him. And I think Newton would be the preference is, and if Newton's there at 29, I think he's in play. I also don't know if he'll be there at 29. After him, Braden Fisk from Florida State is the guy who I think is next in line. And Chris Jenkins, Arororo, and then Sweat, Travion Sweat, the guy that you like out of Texas, the big 366 pounder.
Minimum.
I right. Those six guys are kind of my range of player that I think would be rotational player right now, starting a year. Those would be guys that you would consider as maybe Aleem McNeil replacement level players. They're all players you're going to have to get on day one or day two. But that's a limited pool. Six guys. That's all you got. Because the pool is limited. And because of the way college is, I think this is going to be the standard where you're going to have limited pools from now on. It makes Aleem a very valuable asset to me. And it's one of the reasons why I don't think they're going to let him slide. If they do, taking one of those six guys that we just named, it makes a ton of sense. And you'd have to do it, like I said, with one of your first three picks.
All right. My David Eakins asks, what pick would you feel comfortable drafting Peyton Wilson, linebacker from North Carolina State?
I don't know. like it, what's their pick in the fifth round? Like that's, I mean, 160 or something like that, 163, 60, something like that. He's going to go 100 picks before
163.
he's going to go 100 picks before I would be feel comfortable taking him on the Lions. Like he is stylistically a guy who makes a lot of sense. He's a big-bodied guy who can run like the wind. He's got real good production, but he also has a long medical history as well. And so with the depth that they have at linebacker, I'm not using a top 100 pick on a player with a long medical history at a position that I have depth at, a lot of depth at. And so for me, I expect Wilson to go on day two. I wouldn't touch him until day three if I were the Lions. So I'm not of the mindset that he's in play for the Lions.
All right, Mike Geiger Jr. asks, Renardo Green feels like the perfect scheme fit for Aaron Glenn, and Eric included him as the Lions' third pick in his recent mock draft, which was awesome. Green
Thank
has
you.
all the tools and the physical traits. Why isn't he higher on our draft on draft boards? What am I missing? Thanks.
Size is always going to be a factor. He's like a tick under 6 foot. He's basically right there though. So like it, you're just, you're going to get a little bit knocked for that. 186, that's a little lower, but that's pretty, again, pretty average for a corner. He's not up in that 200 range. He's also at a school that I think people don't are at Florida State. They tend to have they or at least last season they tended they are tended they more often than not got a lot of attention because of what their offense did as opposed to what their defense did. And I think that the general consensus on their defense was a lot of their players were considered to be not as talented as their offensive players, like Keon Coleman. That's why he's in that range. And what we're seeing here in the offseason is the Florida State offensive players are kind of dipping a little bit now, and their defensive players are kind of rising up a little bit now, right? That's why Fisk from Florida State, and we just talked about Coleman from Florida State. Now we're talking about another guy from Florida State, but it's the defensive players that are rising. So I think when you watch college football, and that's part of what makes college football deceiving, is that you see guys, you see a team that's doing well and succeeding, and you naturally think it's because of their offense or because of how they're winning games. But when you start evaluating how they translate to the NFL, it takes a little bit longer for those for the process to work. I think Green is underrated in the on through online right now. I think he's probably much higher on NFL boards than he is nationally. But his stock is definitely rising up right now.
Nick Ola. I keep trying to think about what the most surprising pick at 29 would be, and I always come back to it being a safety. We know
Yeah.
Brad Holmes doesn't care about positional value. Last year was a weak linebacker class, and they found the best linebacker and took him in round one, while the next one didn't get drafted until the third round. And what's being labeled as a weak safety class, is there one safety in this draft class that stands out amongst the others that you could see the Lions surprising in round one, just like with Jack Campbell last year?
I don't. But then again, I also didn't see Jack Campbell coming last year, so I could be fooled again. The thing with Jack Campbell, though, was that Jack Campbell was an elite athlete. Size, speed, production, all of it was there. And that's part of the appeal with Jack Campbell. There's not a safety that has, there's safeties that have production, but not athleticism, or others that have athleticism and not production. There's not one safety, in my opinion, that has all of those things that would then lead to them being a first-round selection. In my opinion, I don't think there's a first-round safety in this class. There are a couple of guys, maybe a handful of guys, that are going to go on day two, but I think the majority are going to go on day three. I just don't see that perfect combination at safety that would lead them to be like, I have to go get this guy because he's too good to pass on. For me, the top two safeties are Tyler Newbin and Jaden Hicks. Newbin has been my number one safety on my board pretty much all season. At the same time, he didn't perform very well this offseason. He was limited. But he's a big ball hawk. He's got a lot of range, but like that athleticism component is lacking. So he's not like a surefire, I think he has a chance to go in round one type of thing. But still, I still think he goes in on day two for sure. But round one, it's a tricky spot. Then again, at picking 29, and we talked about earlier, if the first rounders are off your board, maybe he is the next highest guy. I just don't see it personally. I don't know if I see Jaden Hicks as who's going to be the top safety on some player on some teams' boards. I don't know if I see him as a guy that, I'd go out and get. Is safety a position that they could address early? Absolutely. Just because, again, we talked about the fact that if he has an injury history, if he also is in the last year of his contract, I just don't see a player that warrants a first round selection. At tackle, there is. That's why I'm saying, that's why even though there's not a need at tackle, You could take a tackle, even though he's not going to, he's not going to play because the talent is there. I just don't see the talent at safety. There's a lot of safeties I like. Don't get me wrong. I just don't see any of them in the first round, personally.
Jeremy Girardi. How do you think the Lions will consider the age of their available board? Combined with athleticism, floor, ceiling, example, Chop Robinson, Kingsley, S. Michael Hall being 21 years old.
I think age is a factor, but I don't think it's like a it's a massive part of what they do. Like if you have two guys that are graded similarly at the same position and one of them's a little bit younger, you may be more inclined to lean with the younger kid who you think maybe has a higher developmental ceiling. But then again, if you think the older guy has a higher developmental ceiling, then you may stick with him too. So I think age is a factor, but it's not one that's going to necessarily like push one guy ahead of another, right? So Michael Hall, when I listed my defensive tackles, I did not include Michael Hall in the top six. So there's going to be other defensive tackles that are older than him that I also think have higher developmental ceiling. So I wouldn't push Hall up ahead of them because just because he's younger. So is it a factor? Yeah, but I think it's a minor factor and just one of like, several hundred things that the Lions take into consideration when they're grading players.
Go Blue Carl asks, who are the top guys on the grit index this year?
All right, so that is still under process. Man, I tell you, what we did last year was just kind of scratching the surface of what we're trying to do with the grid index this year. And I can't say that I can't give you a top list now, but I can say that the information that we're collecting is almost overwhelming at this point. Anthony, who is between the numbers on Twitter at between the numbers, Anthony is, he helped me with it last year. He's doing data collection and stuff like that this year. He's a very smart guy, and he's pulling a lot of important data and helping me to ascertain how that's going to shake out. Last year, we were working with maybe like 6 to 8 pages of information. Right now, we're at like 35 pages of information, and we haven't even gotten to Dane Brugler's beast yet, which is a massive overload of information on players' mentality. So I don't have a definitive answer on that. I can tell you though that what we're building behind the scenes is pretty extensive, and I haven't been able to sort through it all at this point. So I don't have like like a top guys list right now, unfortunately, but it's coming down the pipe here in the next couple of weeks, and we're going to do our best to do it some justice and get some names out there for people.
Ashley David Soden, what FCS prospects do you think the team are interested in? And are there any that you would bang the table for? And in your opinions, why are people higher on Xavier Legette compared to Keon Coleman when they have similar skill sets and Coleman is technically proven? It's worth noting Holmes has drafted two FCS players, right, in the last two drafts. Colby Sorsdahl last year and then James Houston the year before that.
All right. Let's do FCS first. The top FCS player, I think, at least what I'm projecting, is Mason McCormick out of South Dakota State. He's a guard. In my opinion, McCormick is probably a guy he's probably going to go on day two, in my opinion. And that's rare for an FCS guy. The FCS guys don't usually go. He's going to be a top 100 pick, in my opinion. McCormick is a guy who stood out for me at the combine. If you look at my combine winners list from the interior offensive lineman, he's on that board. He passed, or he was one of the top, I don't know, whatever. I did like 10 guys or something like that. He was one of those 10 guys that I said, man, he had a really good combine. This is a guy you got to pay attention to. He's probably the best FCS player that comes to my mind. On the defensive side of the ball, it's a little harder to find the FCS guys. The one that comes that sticks out to me is Miles Harden from South Dakota. Another guy who is a corner. Sorry, he's a corner from South Dakota. He's a tick undersized, and his measurables are not great, but the production's there. And I'll give you one more. As a edge rusher, probably would play Sam for the Lions, and that's Jalix Hunt from Houston Christian. He was a safety that put on like 50 pounds and turned into an edge rusher. He's
Wow.
got a little, he's got some coverage skills. He showed up at Houston Christian at like, he's like 6'3" and a half, and he was 200 pounds when he showed up, and they added 50 pounds. And so now he's like 6'4", 250. He's an edge rusher who has some coverage skills, and he's a guy who'll probably go on day three, and is another guy that when I watched him at the combine, he made my standout list. He was a guy that I watched on the edge and went, oh, okay. There is movement skills here that are very appealing. He has the production. The problem is he played at Houston Christian, so it's not like a lot of people have seen him. So Jalix Hunt is maybe, I don't know if I which if I'd put Hunt ahead of Harden. I think they're both probably close to me. Maybe Hunt's a little higher. But the best FCS guy is McCormick, the guard from South Dakota State, in my opinion.
What about Xavier Leggett, Keon Coleman, that part of the question?
That's terrific. That's a great question. Because like Leggett, they interviewed at the combine. You know, he's a guy who's on their list. He's got he stylistically kind of plays like AJ Brown. Very highly rated in the draft community. Dane Brugler has pointed out that maybe he's not as highly rated on in the NFL community. And then you look at a guy like Daniel Jeremiah's board, where his top 50 board, where he's got like 11 or 12 receivers in his top 50, and Leggett's not amongst them. But Keon Coleman is, and on my board, Keon Coleman's higher than Leggett. But I could, at the same time, I think Leggett's a highly talented player that I could see go early in round two. I don't know. Maybe he sneaks into round one. It's there's going to be a point where the wide receiver group, when it just becomes like a stylistic preference of what receiver you like, and Leggett's going to appeal to teams. But for me, I still think Coleman is the intangibles on Coleman make him a better player. His size, his big play ability, his production over multiple seasons. Like Leggett was a guy who didn't come on really till like this year. Right. Like he had some production in the past years, but this was the year when he really broke out. At the same time, these AJ Brown, Deebo Samuel type of like big slot guys that can be highly productive in a variety of different ways. Those are very appealing to NFL teams. And those are guys that can really break out in the NFL. But for me, I have Coleman higher. I think Coleman is it's you have more assurances with Coleman. And I still think Coleman has a really high ceiling. So I still have Coleman higher on my board.
Tom Wilkinson asks, Brad Holmes loves to go against media draft boards, and obviously we only have selection in the
One
first
selection.
60 pick. One selection, okay.
Yeah.
First 60 picks. Any names outside the consensus top 50 who you could see the Lions falling in love with and taking a pick 29? Nealon, Jenkins, or Hororo, I like as surprises.
Ooh, Nealon is the guy that's getting the most love right now. He's the guy who's rising up draft boards in the media, and I think the media is starting to catch up to some things that NFL said. So Marshawn Nealon from Western Michigan, he's an edge rusher. He has a lot of great measurables that I think would fit with the Lions, and there's some production there that's also very appealing. If the trick becomes the group that he's competing with are like the Robinsons. You got Chop Robinson, who's this uber athlete who isn't as productive as Nealon. Darius Robinson, who is like a bigger version of Nealon. He's going to be kind of in that range. Could he sneak ahead of him? I think there's a possibility he could sneak ahead of him, and that would absolutely surprise people. So I do think Nealon is a guy that could surprise people. That I that like what Tom said, he's probably not talked about in the top 50, but he could be a guy who ends up sneaking into the first round. Araujo, I don't know if he's going to go up. He's right on that border. I don't know if he could sneak in. He's a guy kind of like Chop, where he has a lot of the intangibles there, the athleticism that's there. It's very appealing, and he can play all these different positions all up and down the line, and so that's going to be very appealing. But he hasn't always had the production. He's more of a 1 year guy, and so he also could maybe jump up and sneak in. So I was the Nealon's the guy I would have picked. I don't know if I have anybody above other than those guys that he's talked about. I can scroll through my list real fast to see, but those are the guys that kind of stand out to me as guys where you're like, they're kind of on the outside, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if they all of a sudden they went in the first round. Maybe the other guy, the only other guy maybe I would suggest is, there's so much hype around Ricky Purcell, the wide receiver out of Florida, that I think there's a lot of people that would like him. I'm not as big of a fan for him, especially with the Lions, because he's mostly a slot. But I could absolutely see, again, once you get past those like first four receivers, someone saying, man, stylistically, he's exactly what we want. And then we go get him. So Purcell is a guy who's been getting a lot of hype recently. Maybe Leggett, right, that we were talking about, right? Maybe he's a guy. But I think you make a case for a lot of wide receivers. But again, I think Tom's first suggestion of Nealon was probably the one that's the guy who's getting the most hype right now, that has been considered a post top 50 guy all offseason.
Swag Kazaki 93 has, I need both of your top five draft targets in the first round.
That's
Five,
hard.
Eric.
That's hard. And I know we're short on time here too. So I'm maybe we put a pin in that one. Because I just haven't narrowed it all down. I wanted to include it because I wanted us to remember this for a future
As we
episode.
inch closer.
Right. Because we're gonna be getting into different we're going to be getting into different things as we get closer, but I wanted us to be able to have that question as a talking point for us later. Maybe we can go a little bit more in depth, talk about why those five guys are. So I'm gonna put a little asterisk next to that on my
All
call list here. And then that's something me and you will both come back and revisit.
Alex Charnick or Zarnik, who's the most realistic, quote, pie in the sky guy you'd like on the Lions, assuming a trade up is in the cards? Oh, wow.
I mean, maybe Mitchell, right? The Quinyon Mitchell, the Toledo corner. I think, man, there's so much that I like about him that I think if they traded up, if he falls, he's a guy who they could trade up for, and it would make a ton of sense. He's a guy who could immediately come in and start, in my opinion. I think he would win a starting job. So, but I also think he's going to the top 15, and I don't know if they're going to be willing to trade up into the top 15. So, in my opinion, you can make an argument that Quinyon Mitchell's the best defensive player in this draft class. Best one.
Wow.
Him, Arnold, and then like him and Arnold, the Alabama corner, those two guys are going to be the top corners. And I could argue that those two guys are the top two defensive players above any of the other ones. So would they trade up for one of them? Maybe. And if they did, I'd be okay with that. So
Yeah,
that
because
would, yeah, go ahead.
I'm looking through the list, and I guess I can't argue with you on that, because the only other one would be is to trade up to get one of the big time wide receivers. They wouldn't trade that high, although I should watch what I say. But that would be it.
Brian Thomas, maybe from LSU, like who's like probably the one right wide receiver that isn't going to go in the top 10. If he slides, he's a guy that I think they would absolutely consider. But yeah, Brian Thomas, Quinyon Mitchell, those are the two pie in the sky where I think they're probably not going to be there, but I could absolutely see the Lions go get them, try and go get them.
All right, Jack Henry, based on his history, I'll be surprised if Holmes doesn't trade out of 29, up or down. I would agree. Are there any particular players you could see Holmes moving up for if that player is on the board longer than expected? Well, you kind of just answered that. Is there a team in the 20s that would be a likely trade partner?
That's hard to say, right? Like trading who you're going to trade with is really hard to predict.
In the
Ironically,
20s, oh, sorry.
the no, I was just saying in the 20s, the one that stands out the most is the one who picks at 20, and that's the Rams, right?
Right,
Because
the trade partner for them.
there's a working history. They've traded with them in the past. Philly at 22. Again, there's a history there. They've worked out deals in the past. I could see them do it again. Green Bay at
Yeah,
25,
I don't know if they would
right?
trade first round. I could see them trading later in the draft, but first round picks with each other, I don't know.
Right. Well, I
Maybe.
mean, they traded pick 45, right?
They got
So,
Brian Branch, yep.
and then Arizona at 27. Those are four teams that they've traded with in the past. And so if I'm Brad Holmes and those are probably guys that I've talked with in the past and would be on the phone with again without issue.
All right. Tyler Stratton, what to you is the realistic absolute dream scenario for the Lions draft?
Okay. And this might be a good final question for us, but I think if you can come out of this, I think there's a lot of ways to answer this question, right? Because there's players that you could find at different spots to fill those different needs. In an ideal world, you would end up with a corner that can challenge to start, a wide receiver that can challenge to start, and a starting offensive lineman with your first three picks. Or
I would agree.
a potential starting offensive
In
lineman.
any order.
Yeah, I'm not picky on that order. Now, that's kind of like what I think would be ideal. Will that happen? I don't know. They could find an edge rusher that they like and go with that edge rusher. Absolutely, I could see
That's
that.
not the question here. The question is, what is the realistic, absolute dream scenario?
So I guess I was thinking like, what might they realistically do? Let me rephrase that then.
Well, that's what you just said is realistic, but you were
Right.
starting to venture off and starting
Right. Right.
to tamp it down.
I appreciate you bringing me back.
Yeah.
So I think it's very realistic for them to find a wide receiver corner that can challenge the start and an offensive lineman that could start a year from now and be insurance against injury. I think that's very realistic, and that would be the ideal situation for me, and I would try and get those. And I don't care what order those three come in, because I think there's depth in this class at all three of those positions. There's need short term and long term at all three of those positions, and those are the three positions that I would love to see addressed. If we're talking dream, I'm gonna say, all right, well, I also want to somehow luck my way into a defensive tackle on day three that I think can be, part of the rotation. I'd like to luck myself into, with four picks on day three, I'd say I'd like one of them to be a defensive tackle, one of them to be an offensive tackle, one of them to be a safety. And I don't know. I can leave that last one, with some flexibility. Just
Oh
take the
man.
best player who's there. But like adding depth at safety, adding depth at tackle, adding depth at defensive tackle on day three. Let's say I'll put edge in there as the fourth one. Adding depth at those four spots, that's what it would be ideal to me. So to recap real fast, wide receiver, corner, offensive line in the top in the first three, defensive line, safety, and offensive line on day three. That's my dream. That would be, I think, based on where the needs and the depth of this class line up.
All right, that's going to be our last question. We do have a couple of miscellaneous questions. Lee Paul Cross, and you kind of already touched on his question. And then Hail Mary asks, the NFC North will be a tougher division this season. What are your predictions for the records for each team? I think we could wait on that one. We haven't even seen a draft yet out of
Well,
anybody, so.
let's see. I think that's a great question for when the schedule drops. All right, so that would be a good one. So let me ask you Before we wrap up, just one quick question. How much are you looking forward to the uniform drop? Because I don't really care. The uniforms are being launched on the 18th of this month. How interested are you in that?
I'm not either, and it's when if I was younger, I'd be way interested, but now that I'm old, I realize I don't like anything anymore.
Is
So
that what it
like
is?
odds are I'm not gonna like it. So it's like, well, why even look forward? I gotta like sit and watch it for a year or two before it's like, yeah, you know what? These aren't bad uniforms. It'll
You know
take me
what?
a while.
I wonder if it is just an age thing, because I tell you what,
Could be.
I talked to some of the guys on at POD, and they're all younger than me, and there's a lot of interest. They all want to talk about the uniforms. They all want to see what it's like. They're all interested in it. But maybe I'm just an old curmudgeon. Maybe it is just
Right.
because I'm just old. I thought it was just my attitude. Yeah, but could be
No,
age
I think
related to me.
it's an
I don't
age
know.
really, because I would have been, if I was, you know, 15 or 25 or whatever, I'd be way interested in what they, you know, what the new
Huh.
uniforms look like. Now it's like, eh, whatever. You know, like I'm rooting for the laundry, but I don't care what the laundry looks like. And maybe a couple of years from now, I'd be like, oh, they do look sharp, actually, you know. And well,
Yeah.
because that's the thing, we're gonna have the new, see, that's gonna be the problem with that episode of that week, is that they're gonna have the new uniforms and we're both gonna be negative about it. Like, I'm gonna hate the font of the numbers, and like, and people are just gonna be, you know, turned off to that segment of the show. But I think, to me, I think it's an age thing. I think it's like, because I used to be interested in that stuff, and now it's like, yeah, whatever.
I think, yeah, for me, it from a, and again, maybe this is just because I'm old, but I think the font thing is the biggest for me, right? Like, because I
Can
want
I
I
see it on TV? Can I see the font? Or
exactly,
you, it's
exactly.
even worse because you're sitting
Yeah.
in the press box. The font makes a huge difference to you.
Yeah, like the difference between 8 and 9
Yeah, you
is
got to be
very
able to
hard.
see it.
Yeah, and so like, fortunately, the body type between Josh Reynolds and JMO was noticeable enough that I didn't have to worry about looking at 8 and 9. I could just look at their body type. But like, yeah, that you know, when you're looking at like the difference between, you know, 88 and 89, those are it's hard to figure that out. You know, like Yaquaras were hard like that, like because their numbers were close and stuff. So yeah, I absolutely the font is the biggest thing that I'm concerned about.
Yeah, so you know, all of you listening, all the youngsters out there listening, this is what you have to look forward to. getting more curmudgeon as you get older, because you know you get worse at everything, and that's
Yeah.
fine. You just get you just have to get used to dealing with that. All right, we not a lot of movement in the ratings. You know, hopefully we get punched up with a few more written ratings.
You know what though? We bumped up big in the
Yeah,
subscription.
and the
So.
over in the yeah, and the overall subscription numbers breaking into the top 100 overall and cracking number 14 in football only,
Yeah, and
number 100
so
overall in sports.
yeah, Apple tracks the downloads, or I'm sorry, the subscriptions, or you know, when I was, it's not subscription. What is it? Subscription? Like it's, I mean,
I
it's
think so. I don't know exactly how that
whenever
works.
you, yeah, whenever I forget what it's called. I'm apologize, but yeah, we've had a lot of a much, we've had a big influx of people subscribing to the podcast, and I think you know that's directly correlated to what's happening at POD, and to the point where we're now, according to Apple iTunes, the 14th most popular football podcast. And
Which we usually get a boost in the off season because, you
yeah.
know, a lot of people don't listen to a lot of those other shows, and where we'll have draft ones and stuff, that usually buoys our rating.
But I want to see if we can maintain that. I want to, you know, we're gonna hopefully some of the things we can put in place, and we're gonna reward fans for hitting that subscribe button. So we got some stuff coming. We got some ideas.
So all you new folks out there, welcome aboard. That's all we got for this week. So until next time, let's go Lions.